Let's review a little bit. It's been a while since we talked about day seven. How many days did God actively create things that we saw in Genesis 1 and 2? How many days did he actively create things? Six. How many days, 24-hour days, are described in Genesis 1 and 2? It's not a trick question. Some are like showing finger answers. Commit, and you can say it verbally. How many days was described in Genesis 1 and 2? Seven. Let's say that together. Seven, right? So there's 7 days that are described in Genesis 1 and 2, 6 active days of creation. And then what did God do on the seventh? He rested. But God rested on the seventh. Did he need physical rest? No, he didn't. And as we looked at that word, to rest, it basically means to cease from creating, to cease from his work of creation. So a lot of times when we see that, maybe in your mind you think of Almighty God, you know, on a hammock or just kind of resting in some way and in some human way, but it's not because he needed physical rest. Was the word Sabbath, was the institution of the Sabbath, did that happen in Genesis chapter 2? You can do this. No, it didn't. There wasn't a mention in the Sabbath there of the institution of the Sabbath. Adam and Eve were not commanded to rest on the seventh day. Maybe they did. I wouldn't be surprised if they did, but they weren't commanded to rest on the seventh day. There weren't commandments for them to worship in a special way on the seventh day, that first seventh day. The Sabbath, you won't see in the Old Testament until over 1,000 years later. So it's interesting, you know, why did God rest? Well, we looked several weeks ago, it was about the completion of creation in a way to celebrate all that he had done in the 6 days. So it was about the completion of celebration, or the completion of creation, the celebration of creation, but then to commemorate, to remember God's work as creator. But yet we know that there are more things, because we have the whole Bible now, Old Testament and New Testament, so we understand there are more things to do with day seven, and so what does that mean to us in 2026? But let me take a sidestep a little bit. Let me ask you this. How many of you care about how the government, the United States of America, spends your tax money? You care about how they spend your money. Would you raise your hand? Okay. How many of you read all of the pages of the Big Beautiful Bill? How many? How many pages, roughly, was the Big Beautiful Bill? 900. Yes, 900. Was that up there before? Okay, yeah, so 900 pages. Now, this week, I was introduced to a phrase, and probably I should know this, and probably many people have done this to emails and texts that I send out. I tend to be, you know, wordy. And so I got some initials, TLDR. What does that mean? Too long, didn't read. Too long, didn't read. So sometimes we think about, yes, we care about how the government spends our taxpayer money, but when the Big Beautiful Bill came out, and this is nothing political, whether it was beautiful or not, but the fact is it was 900 pages long, and not one of us took the time to read those 900 pages, even though we say, yeah, we care about this law, we care about how the government is going to spend our taxpayer money. So let me shift to the Old Testament. How many of you care about what is included in the Old Testament? How many of you regularly read the Old Testament all the way through? Amen. All right, so let's give them a hand. Good. But yet, okay, how many could you think you could probably write down the Ten Commandments? Good. How many of you could write down the 600 commandments found in the Old Testament? TLDR, too long, didn't read, right? I mean, there's just so much. So one of those has to do with the Sabbath. As we come into Exodus and Leviticus and Deuteronomy, there are instructions about then specifically, this is what you're supposed to do on the Sabbath on the seventh day. Does that still pertain to us in 2026 or not? Why was it important even then? What were some of the purposes of the Sabbath? We're going to look at these and hopefully answer them biblically today. But first of all, let's look at the presentation of the law. As we do this, I want you to see, did you know that let me ask you this. How many of you have been involved or you know someone personally of the Seventh-day Adventist Church? My hand is raised. Did you know that there were Seventh-day Baptists here in Metro Atlanta? There are two Seventh-day, at least that I found online, there's two Seventh-day, Metro Atlanta Seventh-day Baptist Church, and then the next one, Southeast Atlanta Seventh-day Baptist Church. So, is it a sin to gather on the seventh day? No, it's not. It's not a sin to gather on the seventh day. We can place an importance, or we can equivalate. Is that even a word? I don't think so. We can make it where it is part of salvation, although we shouldn't, but some do that. And so that's where the risk comes in. But let's look at what is the presentation of the law. As I was studying this, one of the commentators, John MacArthur, used four kind of divisions that I found very helpful. I found that they were helpful, but also I saw, and I believe that they're biblical. One is a twofold summary of the law. A twofold summary of the law. Is it easier to remember 600 things or two things? Two. So thank God that he has summarized in very clear words, both in the Old Testament and the New Testament, and actually numerous times, a twofold summary of the law. So let's jump into Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 5. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. So this is the very first part, the very first summary of all of the law. In the New Testament, Jesus repeats this. In fact, in Matthew chapter 22 and verse 36, he's asked, "Teacher, which is the great commandment of the law?" And Jesus immediately responds, and he said to him, verse 37, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment." Now, this commandment, it can be found in other parts of Deuteronomy. It can be found in Deuteronomy chapter 10, Deuteronomy 11, Deuteronomy 19, Deuteronomy 30. So if you are to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, you will fulfill all of the law. So let me ask you this. In 2025, how many of you could say, I perfectly loved God with all of my heart, soul, and mind, the 365 days of 2025? None of us. Okay, well, what about last month in December? I perfectly loved God with all my heart, soul, and mind all of the days of December 2025. How about yesterday? No. And not one of us could say, yes, I did that yesterday. Maybe not even this morning. So it's a reminder of, boy, we miserably fail. God is worthy of our perfect love. God is worthy of our service. But yet, we don't do that on a regular basis. That's the first and great commandment. Then we see the second. Look at Leviticus chapter 19 and verse 18. This is the second of the twofold summary of the law. Leviticus 19 and verse 18. You shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against the sons of your own people, but you shall love who? Your neighbor. How? As yourself. Do those words sound familiar? Yes, because again, Jesus repeated that back in Matthew, the same passage, if we were to continue on, Matthew chapter 22 and verse 39, Jesus says to the same person, he says, and a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. And then notice how he summarizes it again. On these two commandments depend, and help me finish out the verse, all the law and the prophets. So if you were to love your neighbor unselfishly as yourself, then again, you would be fulfilling all the law and the prophets. And I could ask those same questions. Did you do that in 2025? Did you do that in December? Did you do that yesterday? Have you done that this morning? And most likely, every question you'd have to say, no. No. Did I try? Most of us probably tried. But we failed. And so did the people of Israel. Notice in Romans chapter 13, verses 7 and 8, there is a connection. It links some of these Old Testament commands, even some of the Ten Commandments, to this twofold summary and kind of zooms in on, well, how do you love your neighbor as yourself? And why do the Ten Commandments have anything to do with that? Even in Romans, in the New Testament, we see this in Romans 13 and verse 7. Pay to all what is owed to them, taxes to whom taxes are owed. Pastor, did you really have to say that? As we're about to come into tax season, was that necessary? Well, it's Scripture. Revenue to whom revenue is owed. Respect to whom respect is owed. Honor to whom honor is owed. Owe no one anything except to do what? Love each other. For the one who loves another has fulfilled what? The law. So if you've loved one another, if you've done this, you've fulfilled the law. And then it goes on in verse 9. For the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and any other commandment are summed up in this word, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no wrong to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfilling of the law. So twofold summary, very simple. Love God with all your heart, soul, and mind. Love your neighbor as yourself. If you do those two things perfectly, you will fulfill all of the law. But is it possible to do that perfectly every day of our life? Is that possible? It's not. So then we come to a tenfold summary of the law. First half, or roughly, the first half of the Ten Commandments have to do of commandments in our relationship with God. So can you help me, especially those of you who said, yes, I could absolutely write the Ten Commandments without pulling it up on Google or looking back in the Bible. What are some of those commandments in relation to God, first part of the Ten Commandments? Don't take the Lord's name in vain. No other gods.
Thou shalt not kill.
Okay, shall not kill. So that's one of in relation to man. Yes. All right, so don't create idols. And keep the Sabbath, okay? So those four would give more direction, more focus on these are the commandments of God, in relation to God. So let's go through them real quick here. Command number one, you shall have no other gods before me. Command number two, you shall not make any idols. Command number three, you shall not misuse the name of the Lord. Command number four, remember the Sabbath by keeping it holy. So especially the verse three of those are very specifically related to God. The Sabbath, yes, it's still kind of a God word as we look in our relationship with God. And then we move into the last six commandments. So help me out with those. What are some of those commandments that we have in our relationship to man? Okay, don't kill.
Do not covet.
Do not covet. Don't commit false witness, no adultery, honor father and mother. All right, let's run through them. Command number five, honor your father and your mother. Six, you shall not murder. Seven, you shall not commit adultery. Eight, you shall not steal. Nine, you shall not give false witness against your neighbor. And then command number 10, you shall not covet. So if we look at the Ten Commandments, if we couldn't even say we've kept the twofold summary of the law perfectly, 2025, December, or yesterday, then certainly these Ten Commandments, we wouldn't be able to say, yes, we've kept them perfectly either. But then beyond that, we have the twofold summary, have the tenfold summary, but then as you go into the Old Testament, as I've already mentioned, you have about 600 commands that give more details, that kind of beef up that what does it mean then to not have other idols? How do you have no other gods before you? How do you honor your father and your mother? The 600 additional commands that we see all throughout the Old Testament give more detail of how exactly God wanted the people of Israel to do those things. So that would be kind of, you can consider that as a manifold summary of the law. This is further explained. How do you love God with all your heart, soul, and mind? Well, you can't have any graven images. And as you look in Exodus and Leviticus and Deuteronomy, there will be further details about what it means not to have any other idols or graven images before you. The tablet of stone upon which God put the Ten Commandments was to be placed inside of what? Anybody remember? The Ark of the Covenant. What was something that was supposed to be placed beside the Ark of the Covenant? Rod of Moses. What else? The Book of the Covenant. The Book of the Covenant. So the first five books, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, that was to be placed beside the Ark of the Covenant. Now notice why. This is very interesting. In Deuteronomy chapter, 31 and verse 26. Deuteronomy 31 and 26, it says this: "Take this book of the law and put it by the side of the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, that it may be there for what?" Yes, a witness against you. Whew, boy, that gives me a warm, fuzzy feeling. Man, the book of the law is to be placed by the side of the Ark of the Covenant as a witness against you. The Word of God says. Think about it this way. It's almost as if having all of your work policies like plastered all over the cubicle where you work. And every day, all throughout the day, you see those work policies of this is what you're supposed to do. This is how you're supposed to be here. These are the requirements you have. Or if you're a student, it's like having the student handbook plastered all over the front doors of the school. And when you come in and out every day, you see all of these rules coming in and out. It is a witness against you. At Northwest Classical, where our kids were in school for a couple of years, they would have dress code check sometimes. And it wasn't announced, but there would be teachers or other staff that would be at the doors and they would check the dress code as the students came in. Do you think when students began to see that, do you think the students were excited about that? They weren't. We would most certainly hear about that when I would pick them up from school. Oh, Dad, you know what happened today? Yeah, we had dress code check. And they found one little white Nike swoosh on my sock. It was supposed to be all black, but they found like one little part of white, and so I got dress coded. God is saying, listen, this is how I expect you to live a pure and righteous life. There's a twofold summary. You can't do that. There's a tenfold summary, the Ten Commandments. You're not going to be able to keep those perfectly. There's 600 commandments throughout the Old Testament. You're not going to be able to keep those either. So as part of, to help you to remember that, it's going to sit beside the Ark of the Covenant, this book of the law, and it will be a witness against you. You cannot do it. This is the level, this is the standard of righteousness, but you will be incapable of fulfilling it all. So that's the presentation of the law. Then we come to the Sabbath that appears to be the sign of the Mosaic Covenant or the sign of the law. Notice what is said about the sign, the Sabbath in Exodus chapter 31, verses 12 through 16. Let me ask you this before. What was the mark, what was the sign of the Abrahamic Covenant? Circumcision. Okay, that's a pretty permanent thing. So that's a sign of the covenant. It was a constant reminder as we come into the Mosaic covenant. There wasn't anything mentioned in the Abrahamic covenant about having to observe the Sabbath. But yet as we move into the Mosaic covenant, there is. So notice in Exodus chapter 31, verse 12 through 16. And the Lord said to Moses, "You are to speak to the people of Israel and say, 'Above all, you shall keep my Sabbath. For this is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I, the Lord, sanctify you. You shall keep the Sabbath, because it is holy for you. Everyone who profanes it shall be...'" Wow. God's not playing around. This isn't like this is kind of a good thing to do. You know, it's healthy. It's great rhythm. No, this is serious. And he's like, if you profane this, know That the just punishment for that, in my economy, my righteous economy, is for you to be put to death. We go on in Exodus 31 in this passage. It says, whoever does any work on it, that soul shall be cut off from among his people. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day shall be put to death. In 2025, how many of you did work on Saturdays? We're still here, thankfully. We need to think about, okay, this was Old Testament, so is this still true for us today? Are we required to honor, to observe, to keep the Sabbath? Well, it's important to remember, this was a sign of the Mosaic Covenant. It was the sign of the law, and we see it's very, very important. Therefore, the people of who, the verse says next? Therefore, the people of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, observing the Sabbath throughout their generations as a covenant forever. So let's move into the system of Sabbath then. If they were supposed to keep the Sabbath, what did that entail? Was it just the weekly Sabbath, or were there more Sabbaths? Another word is holy convocation. These holy days, the feasts of the Lord, were there other things that they had to do as well? So the system of Sabbaths and holy days. First, we look at the weekly Sabbath, the seventh day, the Saturdays, the weekly Sabbath. We see in Leviticus chapter 23 and verses 1 through 3. The Lord spoke to Moses saying, speak to the people of Israel and say to them, these are the appointed feasts of the Lord that you shall proclaim as holy convocations. They are my appointed feast. 6 days shall work be done, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, and it's called what? A holy convocation. Convocation is kind of it's a word we don't use often. There's like a convocation center at KSU. We have convocation ceremonies. But it's in this context, it is a sacred meeting. It is a sacred time of a holy convocation. You shall do no work. It is a Sabbath to the Lord. Where? Yeah, where you live. Where you live, and we'll see later, more specifically, it appears that you really weren't supposed to go out of your even specific home very much on the Sabbath days. There were some exceptions to that, but as a general rule, you weren't even supposed to be going outside of your home even on the Sabbaths. So seventh day, weekly Sabbaths, okay. Then we go to religious feasts and holy days. Religious feasts and holy days. What are some, there's many nations represented just in this small group, praise God, but what are some holidays that you celebrated in your home country that you miss in the United States of America? You celebrate in your home country, or maybe if you've lived abroad, you enjoyed some holidays there that you don't have here. What are some of those? Lunar New Year, okay? What else? Okay, you missed kind of how New Year's is celebrated. It's a really big celebration in Brazil. Corn Day. Yeah, there was like this special like time to celebrate corn in Brazil. Okay. What else? Children's Day. Yes. Now, where was that for you, Josh?
Honduras.
In Honduras. Okay. Do you know what date it was? Okay, it's interesting. So Brazil had Children's Day, and they got gifts, and as a parent, we told our kids, well, every day's Children's Day, so you know we're gonna just observe this day, but every day's Children's Day. But so in Honduras, that was very common. In Brazil too, October 12th, which happens to be my wife's birthday, but it was Children's Day every time she had a birthday, and you're supposed to give gifts to your children and celebrate, you know, how great they were and all these things. But they're different holidays. Israel had some very special holy feasts and holy days. Some of them brought aspects of celebration, while others brought very serious reflection and even fasting. Okay, so let's run through these quickly. All right, so we're not going to go through and look at all of these specifically, because the main point I want you to see is the Sabbath system was not just the weekly Sabbaths. There was a lot more involved as you look at the Sabbaths, the holy convocations, the religious feasts of the day. All right, Passover, so it was in the month Nisan. It was day 14. So that was to, you know, celebrate what happened in Israel later. There would be a significance as it relates to Christ. But this specifically, initially, was to celebrate what God had done in passing over the people of Israel and his judgment on the Egyptian people. That was day 14, and it's in, you can find it in Leviticus 23 and also Exodus 12. The very next day, Nisan 15, the 15th day of the month, you have the Unleavened Bread Festival that starts, and it's for 7 days. The 15th day of the month, that day was supposed to be a Sabbath. It was supposed to be a holy convocation, even if it didn't fall on a weekly Sabbath. There wasn't supposed to be any work done on that day. So day 15 and day 22, so the first and eighth day of that week-long festival, no work was to be done, and you were supposed to honor that as you would a weekly Sabbath. You come to the Feast of First Fruits, still in the same week. So in that long kind of Passover and then Unleavened Bread, you have that week. Well, after, and there was some difference on this, Pharisees celebrated it one way, Sadducees celebrated it another way as you fast forward to the New Testament. But it appears that the Feast of First Fruits was done after the weekly Sabbath that would fall during the week of the Unleavened Bread Festival or Feast. So then you have an additional, potentially additional Sabbath during that week. And the Feast of First Fruits, it was kind of an idea of that God has delivered you from Israel, taken you to the Promised Land, and we want to celebrate the very beginning of harvest and give thanks to God. You would count then 49 days, and on the 50th day would come to Pentecost. It would be a celebration of the end of the harvest on the day of Pentecost. No work was to be done on that day either. And then later you come to the Feast of Trumpets. So this would be the end of the agricultural year, the Feast of Trumpets. This was on the first day of the seventh month. First day of the seventh month, so again, not a weekly Sabbath. It could potentially fall on a weekly Sabbath, but a lot of times, and probably most often, it wouldn't. But no work was to be done on that day. Then the Day of Atonement. Okay, you have the Day of Atonement, a very, very serious time for the people of Israel to evaluate themselves, to reflect on how well they had done or how miserably they had failed at keeping the law, the twofold summary, the tenfold summary, the manifold summary. They were supposed to, in Leviticus, it talks about afflicting yourselves. It says those who don't afflict themselves were to be cut off. And the idea most likely of afflicting yourself, it kind of seems to point to fasting during that time frame. And it was this serious reflection of looking inward at how have I done and how miserably perhaps have I failed God and how much do I need atonement. This would be when the priest would go into the Holy of Holies, the Day of Atonement. It was a Sabbath of solemn rest. And then 5 days later, you would come to the Feast of Booths, also called the Feast of Tabernacles. This would point back to the time in the wilderness when the people of Israel were journeying to the Promised Land and they dwelled in tents. So during these 7 days, they were supposed to, again, dwell in tents made with palm branches and other things. But you had two holy convocations. In essence, you had two additional Sabbaths that no work was to be done. So you've got the weekly Sabbaths. You have these feasts that happen. But then you come to a Sabbath year. Okay, so let's look at that next. You have a Sabbath year in Leviticus 25, verses 4 and 5. But in the seventh year, there shall be a Sabbath of solemn rest for the land, a Sabbath to the Lord. You shall not sow your field or prune your vineyard. You shall not reap what grows of itself in your harvest or gather the grapes of your undressed vine. It shall be a year of solemn rest for the land. No sowing was to be done. No harvesting was to be done during that seventh year Sabbath. was a rest for the land. Debts were to be forgiven to fellow Israelites. You were to forgive any debts that were outstanding on that seventh year. So how do you think that affected people asking for loans like year six, kind of halfway through the year? It's probably like, I'm not so sure I'm going to loan you money right now. Because come 6 months from now, you know, Sabbath year, well, I'm going to have to forgive this debt. I want you to look at even Webster's Dictionary. Webster's Dictionary obviously is not Christian. There's not a Christian base in that. But it recognizes even the history of what we know as a sabbatical. There's a language path. There's a linguistic history of that. Hebrew is Shabbat. The Greek is sabbaticos. Latin has the same spelling as English as sabbatical. And so there's this foundation of the idea that for 6 years, there is 6 days, there's work to be done. On the seventh, there's rest. And in some ways, there's 6 years that work is to be done. And on the seventh, a sabbatical or Sabbath year. Back in the 1800s, Harvard made it more popular, the idea of their professors working for 6 years and then having a sabbatical year where they would take a year off for research and more study during that sabbatical year. And Webster's points back, this all has biblical roots, the Sabbath year. But in addition to that, we also come to the year of Jubilee. So you have your weekly Sabbath, you have your holy days, your feasts throughout the year, you have your Sabbath year, but then every 49 years, that following year was supposed to be called or was supposed to be celebrated as the year of Jubilee. There's no record that this was ever observed by the nation of Israel. In fact, it appears that one of the reasons that they were taken into captivity and judged by God is their failure to observe some of these Sabbath years and certainly their failure to observe the year of Jubilee. But every 50th year, everyone was supposed to return to their original family property, the land that was owned by their clan. Indentured servants, even outside of the year of Jubilee, as an indentured servant worked for 6 years, they were supposed to be freed on the seventh year. And then certainly on the year of Jubilee, any servants at that time, any indentured servants were supposed to be freed on that 50th year. God promised that both for the Sabbath year and the year of Jubilee, that on that year prior, he would give it a crop in abundance where they wouldn't have to sow during that next year. And the crop would be so abundant that it would last them through that next year and through the sowing and season, farming season of even the following year, which would be the eighth year. God says, listen, just like I did in the wilderness with the manna and all this, just like I showed you my power in the 6 days of creation, rested on the seventh, just as I've shown you that I've taken you from the land of Egypt and brought you to the promised land, I will provide for you. These are all of the things that they were expected to do. Now notice in Leviticus chapter 23, kind of a summary. These are the appointed feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim as times of holy convocation, for presenting to the Lord food offerings, burnt offerings, grain offerings, sacrifices, and drink offerings, each on its proper day, besides the Lord's Sabbaths. So besides the weekly Sabbaths, and besides your gifts, and besides all your vow offerings, and besides all your free will offerings, which you give to the Lord. Is this system an easy system to follow? No. It's like, whew, wow, that's a lot. There's a lot to think through and to follow and to try to obey. And if you don't obey, if you don't follow them, boy, there's some very serious consequences. This is not just like, well, it's kind of a neat suggestion and kind of healthy and hopeful. You know, no, this was very, very serious. And it was God's way of saying, this is my level of righteousness, but as a very clear way to show mankind, you can't do this on your own. It is impossible to attain the level of righteousness needed. You need my mercy. You need my forgiveness. in review, and we haven't looked at all this scripturally, but in review quickly, what can't you do on the Sabbath? Well, Exodus 20 says you're not supposed to work. Exodus 16, as a general rule, you weren't supposed to leave home. Exodus 16 again, you weren't supposed to cook. Exodus 35, you weren't supposed to build a fire in your home. Jeremiah 17, you weren't supposed to carry loads of things in and out of the city. In Nehemiah, it says you weren't supposed to buy or sell on the Sabbath. Isaiah 58 says this is not supposed to be a day where you kind of plan your own agenda and you do the things that bring you pleasure and happiness. Nope, that's not what this day is about. So, is that tough to follow all of those rules? Some of you will go out to eat today. Well, you really can't do that if you're honoring the Old Testament Sabbath. Some of you may buy clothes today. You might even click the button on Amazon. Well, you're not supposed to do that. You shouldn't even order Uber Eats unless they bring the food to you free, because you can't buy if you were to follow those things from the Old Testament. This is a complicated system of Sabbaths, holy days, and all these things. The end of Isaiah 58 verse 13, though, brings us to an important point. It says, however, the highlight of the Sabbath should be that you take joy and delight in your God. That should be the highlight of a Sabbath. So I want to close by looking, what is the purpose of the Sabbaths and holy days? The purpose of the Sabbaths and holy days. In fact, let me do this. For time, I'm going to run through these, and we'll actually pick up next week and look at them quickly. But just so you kind of have the points, look back, rest, and marvel at the Lord's work. Look inward to recognize their sin. Look upward to Him for mercy. Look outward to show mercy to others, forgiving debts, so forth. Look forward to the eternal rest found in Christ. And that would help them to see this is not just about following all these rules, but there are more meaningful things to look forward to. And as we said in Colossians, as we even said and repeated together, these were very important, but they were just shadows of things, and of specifically of the one, the Lord of the Sabbath, the one who would do all the work, the one who would say it is finished, and the one who would provide the offer for eternal Sabbath rest in Him through Jesus Christ. We bow your heads as we close this morning.